You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Barbara in California, and her question is about explaining to others that child-centered is a method that can work for any child. And oh boy, what a important topic. So I'm going to read parts of her email and we'll dive into her questions. But this is something I think that if we don't really grasp and really don't understand and really don't prepare ourselves to have discussions about, we are not doing a service to our model, and we're not going to ever be able to justify the work that we do with children and what's happening in the playroom. So I know that's a lot of pressure, but we really do have to be able to understand how to respond when someone says, well, I just don't think that you should exclude other models, or I don't think that you should be exclusively one theoretical orientation. So I will share some of Barbara's questions and we'll dive in. However, before I do that, I have some openings at my center in Tampa. I mentioned it last week. Please go to playtherapynow.com if you are willing or able to come work with me in the Tampa Bay area in Florida. I would love to have you. If you want training in child-centered, if you want to work with me directly and the therapists at my center and get basically a masterclass in a child-centered private practice, I would love to hear from you. So playtherapynow.com is where you can fill out a form and I'll get back in touch with you. Okay, so thank you, Barbara, for this question. I think this is so relevant. So she says, I'm at a California agency that places counseling interns at elementary schools. Her clients are from 5 to 11. She says she loves child-centered play therapy and the model, and she's been learning all about it. So then she says, at first, my supervisor was supportive of my interest in child-centered, but now she thinks I'm too focused on the method, which that in and of itself, sorry, I'm digressing from the email, but no one can ever be too focused on their theoretical model. I'm sorry, that's just not even possible. So I'll read that sentence again. I'll get off my soapbox. At first, my supervisor was supportive of my interest in child-centered, but now she thinks I'm too focused on the method and shouldn't exclude directive techniques from my practice. Her thinking is that child-centered doesn't work with every client, and I would be doing a disservice to my clients by trying to make the model fit for everyone. She also thinks she would be doing a disservice to me by not exposing me to other methods. But so far, here's the kicker, she hasn't named a specific client that she thinks would benefit from a different approach. I'm torn between staying true to child-centered and continuing to learn all I can about it versus following her advice and trying some direct interventions. So how do you explain that child-centered is a method that can work for any child? All right. So Barbara, thank you so much. And thank you for caring enough about child-centered and caring enough about your orientation that this is a crisis for you. Because related aside, before I dive in here, I have talked to so many clinicians, so many therapists that work with children that have been in the exact same situation as you. They are being supervised by someone who is not a play therapist or who is not a child-centered play therapist. And they feel torn. And then they just say, you know what? I just need to do what my supervisor says, or I should just trust what my supervisor is telling me, or, you know, maybe it is okay to do both and I can do a hybrid and sometimes I'll be directive and sometimes I'll be non-directive. And the fact that you are emailing me and saying, how do I explain that this is a method that can work for any child? I hope that you're very proud of that, because it means that you want to adhere to the model and it means that you really believe that it works. So yes, you absolutely can stick and adhere only to child-centered, and it does work with all children. So let's talk through that. So if the concern is that it doesn't work with every kid, it begs the question, well, what child would it not work for? And just to illustrate my point, because this isn't about my opinion, this is about empirical evidence, This morning, before I recorded this podcast, I searched child-centered play therapy contraindications. And for those of you that may not be familiar, that's a fancy word for when would you not use child-centered play therapy? So there are contraindications for filial therapy, for example. Filial therapy is the family therapy approach where you train parents to use play therapy with their own children. You can readily find contraindications for filial therapy, one specifically being if the parents are perpetrators of abuse. You would never want to train parents to do play therapy with their own children if they are actively or historically abusing their children. That is a contraindication. Okay, so I want to make it clear that there are contraindications for theoretical models, and you can readily look them up and find them. So I searched child-centered play therapy contraindications, and you can't find any support for any population that says you should not use child-centered with that group. So, and test that for yourself. Don't believe me. You can search that too. Dr. Google's very helpful in situations like that. So right off the bat, my immediate reaction is if you can't find empirical evidence that says that it's contraindicated for certain populations or for certain children, then that pretty much says that you don't have to be concerned that it's not going to work. So I start there, but I also want to share with you some other options as far as fodder for conversation when you're having to defend child-centered model. One of our greatest tasks when we sign up to be a child-centered play therapist, and that's, you know, theoretically, right? But when we say, you know what, this is who I want to be, this model resonates with me, I'm hooked, I'm all in, I'm a child-centered play therapist, you also then become someone who has to educate and communicate and articulate and evangelize. And I would love to say that you could skip that part of the job because it's not always fun or easy. But the unfortunate truth is we have to do those things because the rest of the world doesn't get it. And we can't expect them to unless we're able to share our position and explain the rationale behind why we've chosen to be child-centered. So two resources that I would give to you, Barbara, and everyone else that I'm sure understands what this is like when someone says, yeah, but child-centered isn't appropriate for everybody. Well, au contraire. So you need to purchase the book, Child-Centered Play Therapy Research. It is edited by Jennifer Baggerly, D. Ray, and Sue Bratton. So that in and of itself gives it a whole lot of clout because those are big names in the field. And they're all UNT people, which is the big place in the field, right? So Baggerly, Ray, and Bratton, the book is called Child-Centered Play Therapy Research. And then the subtitle is The Evidence Base for Effective Practice. And why you need this book. I actually encouraged all of the participants in my coaching program to purchase this as well. So in the book, you have research in play therapy as section 2. And then you have research in filial therapy as section 3. And I want you to understand that there are, I'm counting, hold on, 6, 9, 12. There are 13 chapters in section 2 talking about all of the different populations and subgroups of children that have evidence base for effective practice. Now, obviously, 13 is not comprehensive of everyone, but that's just in this book. And that is a really, really helpful resource because it gives you all kinds of populations and all kinds of articles that prove how effective child-centered is. Now, in addition to that, you need to make yourself familiar with the meta-analyses that have been conducted on child-centered play therapy. If you don't know what meta-analysis is, it's a fancy word for you take all kinds of research and you do research on all of the research collectively. So essentially, you aggregate all kinds of research that has been published, and then you test the findings of all of those research data pools to prove that not only were they individually effective, but collectively it was effective. Okay. So D. Ray has done many meta-analyses. And if you look up her work, you will find that you can find valid empirical evidence for child-centered play therapy with pretty much anything you can think of. So you have any ethnicity, you have any race, you have any culture, you have any child, 3 to 10 specifically is the sweet spot, but they've also found it effective with adults. They found it effective with people that have speech difficulties. So selective mutism, apraxia, aphasia, traumatic brain injuries, the elderly, people with dementia. I mean, it even spans far more of an age range than just children. And they have proven it effective with cultures and races and ethnicities and presenting problems and diagnoses and past experiences. The list goes on and on and on. So you're looking at child-centered play therapy research edited by Baggerly, Ray, and Bratton. Then you're looking at the meta-analyses, the studies that have been conducted. D. Ray has been kind of the pioneer of that. And so if we understand there's all kinds of empirical support for child-centered play therapy, and we don't find contraindications anywhere, it's really a moment of satisfaction for us to say, I know that this will work with any child. And that's not to be prideful or to have an ego or to say, I told you so, but we have evidence to support it. This isn't just because we like the model. This isn't just because we feel good when we use it. It isn't just because we've seen some success in the playroom when we've implemented it. And all of those things are true. But that's not what we come to these conversations with. We come to conversation with data and with evidence. And when you have valid sources that say this works, there's no arguing against that. So that's my first thought. My second thought is, Barbara, you said at the end, I'm torn between staying true to the model and then trying some direct interventions. So here's what I want to share with that. And this is something that a lot of clinicians will do. So I just want this to be a broad spectrum discussion here. When we switch theoretical models, I was just talking about this in one of my training groups yesterday with one of the participants. She did not start out wholly child-centered and then converted to all child-centered, but she says that she thinks it has been very confusing for the child, and we process that. So I want to be really clear. When we approach a child in a child-centered way, and then for whatever reason, we deviate from that. So we try a direct intervention, we bring up a topic of discussion, we don't adhere to the model, and we say or do something in the playroom that is not wholly child-centered. It does several things. It's extremely confusing for a child because something in their gut says, wait, what is going on? And if you don't have trust and stability and predictability and consistency in a playroom, you might as well give it up. So if a child is counting on you to respond in certain ways and react in certain ways and reply in a certain type of dialogue, and they know they're in charge and they know that they're the ones that get to decide what happens, and then one day they come in and you go, I think I'm going to do an activity with you today. It essentially puts them in a state of existential crisis, if you will, because they're like, wait a minute, how does this work? What does this mean? This isn't what I normally expect. I don't really know how I feel about this. What's going on? So not only is it extremely confusing, but it also makes the process of therapeutic gain and healing take longer. I have had so many therapists say, oh my gosh, I wish I could go back and start with some of my kids that I worked with when I was eclectic. And I'm air quoting that with a hint of snarkiness in my voice. I'm sure you heard it. You know how much I hate that word. None of us should be eclectic, okay? Please don't ever put on anything that you are eclectic. Please don't say that you're eclectic. Please don't present to the world that eclecticism in therapy is appropriate. It's not. And I know there are all kinds of therapists that are going to really be upset about me saying that out loud. But if we believe in a model and it is our theoretical orientation, we should only ever do that. It grounds us. It stabilizes us. It gives us clinical support for the work that we're doing. So I've had so many play therapists say, I wish I could go back when I was eclectic, and I wish I could work with those kids again from start to finish being only child-centered, because it would have helped them so much, and it would have been so much faster, and it would have been so much better. And I so deeply regret that I was all over the place in my work with those kids because they were the ones that had the injustice. So it makes everything take longer. It makes it more difficult for gains. It convolutes the entire process. So those are very, very important considerations when we're questioning whether or not we should add in some kind of direct activity or any kind of other directive approach, because this is essentially where we stand with this. Either we trust the process and we trust that the child knows what they need to work on and that they will work on it, or we trust ourselves to lead and guide the therapeutic process, but they both cannot exist. So if we've given the child permission to be in charge and to do the work that they need to do, and that we trust that the process unfolds as it should, and then we try to step in, we're essentially saying, I don't actually trust you, and I don't actually think you're going to do the work, so let me take over. But it's one or the other. It's not a both and. I can't be in charge and have the child in charge. I can't trust the child and expect me to run the show. It doesn't work. So we're either all in and child-centered and we trust the process, or we shouldn't be child-centered. That's really at the heart of it. And then finally, we have all of this evidence that shows how effective it is. So we need to have those articles saved on files. We need to have access to books and meta-analyses so that when a supervisor or when a principal or when an attorney or when a pediatrician or when a parent or when a guardian ad litem or when anybody says, oh, insurance companies, I'm actually going to do an episode. I had a listener write in about insurance companies saying it's not a billable model. That really chipped me off. So I'm going to talk about that soon too. But when you have insurance companies say, no, it's not going to work, it's not billable, you need to have all of these things ready. You need to say, here, I'd like you to take a look at this. I'd like you to read this. I'd like you to assess what this book says. I'd like you to look at this meta-analysis. Why? Because sometimes they're not going to believe the words that come out of our mouth. And that's okay. You will get better and better at articulating and communicating and evangelizing, and you will be more confident and you will be able to communicate those things to where people do believe you. But early on, they don't have to believe you. They need to believe the data. They need to believe what has been published in journals and in books. So you need to have all of this at your disposal, and you need to make it accessible to people. Here, take a look at the articles in this book. Take a look at the meta-analysis here that's been conducted. Take a look at the titles of these journal articles and the populations with whom they've done child-centered play therapy and found it effective. So you should have a little file saved that has all of this stuff, and you bring it out when you need to, because you don't have to fight this battle on your own. You just need to look to the evidence that's already been put out into the world. And there's a little bit less pressure in that case, right? Because it's not, I have to be able to explain to you and convince you how important this is. No, I just need to show you that it's already been proven. And then really quickly, before we wrap up, this was a related tie-in, so I wanted to let you know this. I just started my January training groups, the coaching program, and I've had three different participants mention that when they switched to child-centered, they questioned if they switched because it made them less accountable, or that it seemed easier, or that it wasn't such a clinically driven model. And I'm kind of summarizing and paraphrasing those conversations, but those were the three topics mentioned, that it was easier to do child-centered than other methods with kids, that maybe they were wondering if it was because there was less accountability that they were drawn to it, or that it seemed less clinically driven. And, you know, as my pastor says, there's a Greek word for that, and it's baloney. So none of those things are true. And I want to spend just a couple seconds talking about that too. I would argue, and I think that I have evidence to support this. So again, this isn't just my opinion. I would argue that it is actually far more difficult to be child-centered than any other model. And here's why. If you just say, okay, this kid has high levels of anxiety, so today when the child comes in, I'm just going to do an anxiety activity with them, and then you check your box, and then you tell parents, yep, we did an anxiety activity today. And then parents go, oh, good, you're addressing the anxiety problem. And, you know, kid did the anxiety activity with you. So everyone goes home in that model and everyone feels satisfied because the box got checked. Well, to me, that's about as easy as it gets, because we have absolutely no way to know what impact that may or may not have had on the child. We have no way to know if later that night when that kid is scared to death about being alone in his bedroom, and that's when the anxiety kicks in the most, and he is so filled with fear that he can't breathe. Did that anxiety activity that you did in the playroom really convey to that moment when he's panicking in his bed in the dark alone? What's the carryover of doing an anxiety activity? How much is that actually going to be implemented or used or effective in any high anxiety moment for that child? What's the long-term effect of doing that anxiety activity with that child? 3 years from now, did that anxiety activity have any influence in the child's ability to have coping and resilience when he feels anxious? Who knows? And in my opinion, doing an activity to check a box for insurance, for a parent, for a principal, for a pediatrician, for whomever is pushing, you need to talk to them about their anxiety. Okay, if I check that box, I may go home and say, wow, I feel really good about myself. Like, that was easy. And I'm accountable. And it was clinically, you know, purposeful. I knew what the presenting problem was and I addressed it. Again, Greek word for that, baloney. Because quite honestly, I don't think that has any impact. I don't think there's any benefit to doing that. What's hard, what's extremely clinical, what's extremely accountable is being 100% all in on the child-centered approach and patiently and painstakingly and purposefully waiting for the child to be ready to deal with their anxiety and trusting that they'll get there and trusting that they can do it and trusting that you're going to serve as the clinical guide rails and the therapeutic journeyman, if you will, to help as they navigate these fears. And as they build resilience and as they build problem solving and as they build an emotional vocabulary and as they grow and as they learn and as they work on their self-esteem and all of this stuff, not only do they have all of those skills that I just mentioned, and that's only a fraction of what kids gain in child-centered, but they will have those forever. So this isn't a temporary band-aid on a problem. This is, I'm gaining tools and skills that I will have with me for the rest of my life. So longitudinally, it's so much more helpful. But when a child deals with their own anxiety in their way, in their time, on their schedule, it's ownership, it's buy-in, and they have the accountability to make sure that it actually sticks. That is hugely powerful versus, oh yeah, Miss Brenna had me work on an anxiety thing on a worksheet today. So please don't ever question that it's easier, that there's less accountability, that it's less clinical. It's none of those things. It's the opposite. So if we're all in on child-centered, it's hard to be all in. It's hard to let the child lead and know that it's going to do what it needs to do. Because if we trust the process, it works. And someone in my training group yesterday, one of the questions they were answering is why I love play therapy. And the response was, because it works and because it's pure. And I absolutely loved that. I was like, oh my gosh, it works and it's pure. And that's exactly what child-centered is. So Barbara, thank you so much for your question. I really appreciate you sending that in. And I hope that is helpful for all of you, because obviously this is something that we all have to be armed with to combat the naysayers in the world. So I'm very grateful for each and every one of you. Thank you for spending time with me each week. I love hearing the stories of what I do with you. So I've been told that I drive with you, I walk with you, I exercise with you, I do laundry with you, I do dishes with you, I fold clothes with you. So I'm very grateful for all of the journeys that we take together. If you'd like to reach out to me, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.